Welcome, everyone, to the Ready for the Draft podcast. I am your host, Greg Schutz. This is episode 11 of the 2025 podcast series, where we take a look at the draft-eligible prospects and get you ready for the NFL draft. And I know it's been a minute since my last podcast, and I'll tell you, battling some sickness, some illness. Really, it started over the holidays and over the last few weeks. The congestion, the coughing, you name it. That's what I've been kind of dealing with. And nobody really wanted to hear me talking while I was dealing with that. So I finally feel, I'm getting closer to 100%. Wanted to jump on and talk college football playoffs. Look, the CFP finally has expanded to our 12-team playoff. I wanted to finally be able to talk about some of these different teams. Now, we have Ohio State and Notre Dame set to match up for the college football playoff national championship tomorrow, recording this on the 19th of January. So tomorrow, Monday, January 20th, will be the college football national championship. And look, Notre Dame, when you look at the draft eligible prospects in this matchup, I think the scale obviously tips in favor of Ohio State. You look at both sides of the football, there are going to be a lot of guys who are going to hear their names called. And I think that's a big reason why Ohio State, the expectations were high for Ryan Day, and the fact that they weren't able to get it done against Michigan, the fact that they weren't even able to make it to a Big Ten championship, that was a big reason why Buckeye fans were calling for Ryan Day's job. But I'll tell you what, since that Michigan game, this team has been playing like its hair is on fire. And, first going in, taking out Tennessee 42-17. And then after that, taking out the Oregon Ducks 41-21. They were a team on a mission. Finally, they go ahead and take down Texas. So you finally get into this national championship. What can you expect? Who are the guys that you should be paying attention to? And obviously, when you look at Ohio State and we talk about this team offensively, I think everybody wants to talk about, and all eyes have to go to the fabulous freshman, Jeremiah Smith. Look, against Oregon, 7 catches, 187 yards, and 2 touchdowns. And really, in that semifinal, what you wound up seeing was a Texas team that was making sure that Jeremiah Smith was not going to beat them. So ultimately, it was the running game, and that really set the tone there for the Buckeyes. And when you talk about the running backs, you talk about Quinshon Judkins, you talk about Travion Henderson, these are two running backs who I think when we look at this group, third, fourth round is probably where you're going to see them come off the board. When we look at the draft, historically, we talk about the draft. I play kind of the NFL draft by the numbers, and as we get closer, we'll really study the positions a little bit more. When we talk about the running back position, we look at it over the years, and like last year, we saw just 4 running backs taken in the first, in the second and third rounds. And then we saw 12 in just the fourth and fifth round alone. So when we look at Quinshon Judkins, we look at Travion Henderson, I think they're in that group right after Ashton Jeanty. I think you've got Caleb Johnson, you've got Omarion Hampton, and then right after that, there's Henderson, Judkins, Cam Scadaboo, who we'll be talking about from Arizona State, the beast, really willing his team to a near victory there against Texas. After that, Dylan Sampson, RJ Harvey of UCF, Woody Marks, Devin Neal, DJ Giddens, LaQuint Allen is a name that you're going to be hearing people talk about more and more. There are a lot of really good quality running backs, but when you look at Travion Henderson, when you look at Quinshon Judkins, these are two guys that I think everybody should be paying attention to because in the form of Henderson, this is a guy that I think he's been able to shake off injury issues from a season ago, and you see the burst. Against Oregon, it was a 66-yard touchdown run, one cut, get to the outside, big hole through the B gap, and then the speed to go down the sideline to go the distance, outrunning the secondary to go to the house. 75-yard reception against Texas that really kind of opened things up there for the Buckeyes as well. So this is a guy that can get it done on the ground. He can also get it done in the passing game against Tennessee. We saw a wheel route from him coming in motion, break a tackle, cut back to the inside, falls forward. It was only a gain of 7 yards, but you could still see his ability to catch the football. There was another play, catch over the middle, picks up 15 yards, continuing to get that play moving down the field. And when you think about Travion Henderson, you know, he's 5'10", 214 pounds. I actually like his game a little bit more than Quinshon Judkins, just from the standpoint that this is a guy, he can run between the tackles, he has speed on the outside, he's shown that he can take the top off of a defense. When you get him into the open field, you're not always going to be able to run him down. And so I think that versatility is going to bode well for him. I look at him as a potential for that third round range right now. When you talk about Quinshon Judkins, you know, when you look at the two of them, I think he's more of that power back. When you think about Thunder and Lightning, the Reggie Bush and Lendell White, if you will, Quinshon Judkins would be more of your power back, right? He's 5'11", 210. So, I mean, their size is pretty similar. But Judkins does have a little bit more power, has some burst. But then, you know, you see that the contact had a 13-yard run, ran through a face mask by Jabbar Muhammad, and was able to just power his way right on through. You see the leg drive. You see the contact balance. This is a guy who wants to get north and south. Don't let him square up to you. You want to keep him moving laterally. Does have a little bit of a wiggle. Does have some good speed. He's not a guy who's going to outrun you and take it the distance, but he does have the speed enough of a burst to get his yards in bunches. So I think Judkins is a guy, again, third, fourth round range. I think what you're probably expecting is probably early day three right now. You want to see what he can run in the 40 time to really see if that can kind of bump things up a little bit. But I think for Ohio State against Notre Dame, because Notre Dame's a disciplined defense, I think you have to establish the run game, and then that'll obviously open up the passing game there. I think they have some key matchups there in the secondary for Ohio State to exploit. And what I mean by that, obviously you have Jeremiah Smith, who, I swear, this guy doesn't even look like a freshman. You know, the poise of a freshman either. This guy is unreal. And look, you know, like I said, Texas, you know, really took him away and forced Ohio State to beat him in other ways. When I look at Notre Dame and I look at that defense, Xavier Watts playing over the top, I think Christian Gray is going to be lined up against him quite a bit. But then that means you've got a freshman like Leonard Moore really having to match up against a guy like Emeka Ebuka. And I think that's scary. That's a scary proposition, because with Emeka Ebuka, this is a guy who I think is a surefire lock as a first-round receiver. He's going to be a number two. He's not a number one wideout by any means. But when you think about him, I look at a guy like Jordan Addison and what he's meant for the Vikings. I could see Emeka Ebuka providing that same type of skill set at the next level. Against Oregon in the Rose Bowl, 42-yard touchdown, gets behind the nickel. Brandon Johnson, Will Howard with a bullet right over him, hits him in stride with the score, catching it right over his shoulder. You see speed on the skinny post, runs by right by Johnson. It was tipped, bobbled, and then secured with only his right hand, to the pad level. Never broke concentration. So again, this guy is just a consummate professional. The hands, so reliable, and then the route running, so crisp. He's so quick to get in and out of his breaks. And for me, he's 6'1", 205, and I think it's the high-end change of direction, easily able to stack the lateral transitions. He's a great, sets up the routes very well. He's not really overly aggressive with his routes either. You love the flexibility, again, getting in and out of his breaks. A little shifty in the open field as well. This is a guy that I think is going to, like Jordan Addison. He's not the biggest guy by any means. He's not going to run through you at all. Some of his blocking can get him into trouble at times. But, Emeka Ebuka is a guy that I think if Notre Dame tries to key in on Jeremiah Smith, take him away, then they're going to have to deal with Ebuka. And look, you're also going to then see Travion Henderson on wheel routes. You're going to see him look to get open. And, when you match him up against the likes of Jack Kaiser at linebacker, that's going to get you into trouble if you're Notre Dame. So I think there's just so many weapons that Ohio State can present you with, and Ebuka is a big reason for that. Now, on the offensive line, Donovan Jackson. Donovan Jackson is a guy, look, he's going to be a guard at the next level. Had to slide over to tackle due to an injury. And you know, with Donovan Jackson, he's shown that he is more than capable of being able to play on the outside. You know, what I loved was, you know, he used his hands against Tennessee to take the defensive end, Dominic Bailey, take him wide of the pocket, able to anchor, show good leverage against the bull rush, good feet mirroring as well, that the hands didn't always match the feet, but it was one of those things to where he had that grip strength that allowed him, you know, that his feet to catch up. So hands into the chest of James Pierce Jr., who himself is going to be a top 15 pick, and was able to keep him in front. Excellent kick slide against Oregon. There's an 8-yard touchdown by Henderson. He was able to get around and square up Mateo Uiagalelei, the defensive end. Gets those arms extended, seals him to the inside on an outside zone run by the running back for the score. And look, you know, I think when you look at Donovan Jackson, I think he's a top 5 guard in this draft. I think people say that he might be a little bit robotic, but at the same time, this is a guy who, again, he's shown the athleticism, his ability, you know, some versatility. Now, again, I wouldn't play him on the outside, but when you move him to the inside, this is a guy who I think could be a plug-and-play starter at the next level. Where does he fit in the range when we talk about guards? A season ago, we did have two guards. Well, really one, because Graham Barton's really playing center. So you're talking about Troy Fatanu coming off the board in round one. And then you didn't see any come off the board in round two, but then 7 in the third round. And so, you know, it started with Isaiah Adams going to the Cardinals. Cooper Beebe was in that group. Christian Haynes, Dominic Pooney. You know, so when you think about where he's going to fall, I think that third round feels right. You know, when you talk about the guards that are going to come off the board in round number one, obviously Will Campbell, Jonas Avenaya, Tyler Booker, and then Armand Membu. Those are probably your four. After that, it's going to be Jackson, Ratledge, and Fairchild. So I think when we talk about the guard spot, you know, if you've got four guards coming off the board in round one, and I think Campbell and Savanaya, they're versatile enough to be a both tackle and guard. I think, you know, they're best suited kicking inside. They may get a shot at tackle starting out. But when I think about Donovan Jackson, he's in that next group. So, you know, depending on how it all shakes out, I think there's a good chance we could see him coming off the board in round number two. Now, here's the thing. We have yet to see 7, and I mentioned 7 offensive guards. We haven't seen 7 come off the board in the first two rounds of the draft in the last 5 years. The closest was 2022, where we saw 3 with Kenyon Green, Zion Johnson, and Cole Strange all coming off the board in the first round. But again, there were only 5 that draft, because we then saw Luke Gadecki and Ed Ingram come off the board in round 2 at 57 and 59 respectively. So when you think about Will and Savanaya, if you move them to tackle, then you've got Booker, Membu, Jackson, Ratledge, and Fairchild. So maybe you could justify that just looking at the position. We just talk about the history of the draft, and I know we're not talking about you know, team needs and how the draft board ultimately shakes out. We're just playing the history game and just looking at the board overall. You know, I think there's a good chance that one of these guys, maybe 2, slide into round number 3. I think Jackson could be that guy that's on the bubble. But again, I think you've got a guy who could be a potential plug and play. Look, Cooper Beebe was the guy that I thought was going to start early in his career, and he fell to round number 3, number 73 overall. So Donovan Jackson fits that same mold. He might be right in that 70 to 73 range, which would put him into round number 3 when it's all said and done. So I think when you look at this team, Will Howard was the MVP against Texas, the offensive MVP. And when you talk about Will Howard, this is a guy I think there's a lot of debate, you know, with him. You know, the arm strength is there. I think the ball placement at times can get him into trouble. I think his decision-making is another issue. Struggles when he's forced from the pocket. I think that's really the biggest thing. You know, he can absolutely struggle in that area as well. But he's a timing guy. You know, if you allow him to get on time, in rhythm, especially on those slant routes, they love to throw a lot of those balls over the middle. When he's able to throw a guy open, it can really put a lot of stress on a defense. And so I think with Will Howard, look, he's 6'5", 235. He's mobile. He can take off and run. So he's a guy, look, you know, we know against Michigan, ended up falling up short when he took off and ran. But what you loved, you know, against Tennessee, you watched him leading Jeremiah Smith on his drag routes. He had happy feet against Michigan. We did not see that against Tennessee, Oregon, and Texas for the most part. I think there were times in Texas where he did struggle with the footwork a little bit. But I think for Will Howard, when we talk about the quarterback position, it's interesting because this isn't the strongest draft in terms of quarterback play. Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders, I think are going to be the only two quarterbacks taken off the board in round number one. That'd be the fewest number of quarterbacks since in the last 5 years, other than 2022 when Kenny Pickett was the lone quarterback taken, number 20 overall by Pittsburgh. I think after that, you've got Jackson Dart, Jalen Milroe, maybe Quinn Ewers as well. And then you've got this other group where it's Riley Leonard, it's Will Howard, it's Dylan Gabriel, I think, maybe, and then Kyle McCord. Maybe Curtis Rourke as well, although he's more of a that pocket passer type, who I think ends up probably falling into that day three conversation when it's all said and done. You know, last year's draft was really an anomaly because we had six quarterbacks come off the board in round one, and then we didn't see another quarterback until round number five. Now, what's interesting is two out of the last five drafts, this past one and then 2022, we didn't see any quarterbacks off the board in round number two. I think we will see that this year. Like I said, Dart, Milroe, Ewers will probably come off the board in round two. And then after that, where do the rest of these guys fall? I think with Will Howard, you're probably looking at the fourth or fifth round. I think teams that are looking for additional quarterback help, you're going to see quite a few teams that are probably going to push up some of these quarterbacks. So I think there's a good chance that you could see Will Howard come off the board sooner, possibly into round number four. But again, you know, I thought Spencer Rattler was coming off the board much earlier than round number five. And ultimately, the Saints were able to get him at number 50, 150 overall. We've seen that he got a couple of starts in his rookie season. So, you know, it's one of those things to where our team's going to be patient enough to wait for a guy like Will Howard to pick him up in round number five. I think there may be a lot more action at that quarterback position, especially because we've seen so many quarterbacks go down, and we're going to the backup, sometimes even the third string quarterback. So teams may be looking to pay more of a premium on these quarterback prospects, be able to get them in and potentially work their way onto the field in the event their starter goes down. So Will Howard's one of those guys that I think could be in that mix. So that's when Ohio State has the football. But then when you look at defensively for Notre Dame, you know, and we're talking just about the draft eligible prospects, I think the conversation again has to start with Xavier Watts. Xavier Watts is an absolute stud at the safety position. This was a guy who started his career as a receiver. So obviously the ball skills are evident. This is a guy that can drive on the football and make plays. Just a lot of fun to watch. You know, won the Nagurski Award in 2023. I think, what was it, 7 interceptions that year. His ability to play over the top, you know, has been something that has been special. But I think really when you watch Xavier Watts, 5'11", 204, what you love is his ability to come up and play the run. You know, you saw it against Indiana in round one, wrapping up the ball carrier around the line of scrimmage. You saw him line up in the box as a third linebacker, off the edge, untouched. Ultimately ends up dropping the running back Tyson Lawton for a loss with the linebacker Drake Bowen against Georgia. Came downhill from depth, not fooled by the end around to Arian Smith, able to get into the backfield, drops him for a 5-yard loss. You saw a tremendous range for him closing in. Dylan Bell on a jet sweep as well. Jack Kaiser kind of forces him wide, able to go downhill, able to drop him for only a 1-yard gain. I think, you know, Xavier Watts is the guy that he needed to come back for another season to really hone in on his skills against the run. We've seen that. We know what he can do against the pass. You saw against Indiana, Miles Cross on a crossing route. He was over the top, reading the ball, able to go down, make a pick. Errant throw by Curtis Rourke. You know, he just does a good job reading the quarterback's eyes and then reading the play, understanding the route concepts, being a former receiver, driving on the football. He's a guy, look, he could also cover, has some cover skills. You saw that against Georgia, covering the receiver in the slot. Comes off his route, to Dominic Lovett coming across the middle on a crossing route, able to sling him down a half yard shy of the first down. So this is a guy that he gets it. He understands the routes and the concepts. Could he sneak into the back end of round number one? I think there's a chance, but in all actuality, I think what you're probably going to see is him come off the board in the second round. I think that's what makes the most sense. When we talk about the safety position and guys coming off the board in round one from the safety position, we didn't see any in 2022, nothing in 2024, nothing in 2023. It was 2022 where we actually saw some safeties come off the board. Kyle Hamilton there at number 14 overall. That's about the range that I think Malachi Starks is going to come off the board. Then you had Daxton Hill and Lewis Seen come off the board at number 31 and 32 overall at the end of round one. That's possibly where we could see Xavier Watts come off the board. I think obviously we have to see who's ultimately going to be landing there. But teams can trade up all the time, trade into round one. That feels like that could potentially be where he is. But I think ultimately what we're going to see is him come off the board early on day two. Look, Cooper DeJean came off the board number 40 overall for the Eagles, and you've seen the impact that he's been able to make for Philly. And so I think that's ultimately where we're going to see Xavier Watts, probably in that 40 range, right around there, between 33 and 40, with the off chance that maybe he could slide in to that very end of round number one. But keep an eye on number zero. He's the guy that's going to be making plays all over the back end of that defense. Now, when we talk about this group, I would have loved to have been talking about Riley Mills. I think Riley Mills was a difference maker up front. I think this was a guy that could have been providing some trouble up front for Ohio State, especially with the way that right guard, Tegra Shibola, has struggled. He struggled mightily in a lot of these games down the stretch, especially in the college football playoff. He's been pushed around quite a bit, and so that's obviously a concern. I think Austin Sierveld has filled in admirably there at left guard as well. And then Montgomery, another guy. That's really where you're going to have the biggest problem areas, I think, when it's all said and done. But Riley Mills would have been the guy to watch at 6'5", 295. You see the power against Indiana, got into the right guard, hands under the pad level, able to stack, lifting up on that pad level, stood him up, able to then shed and drop him for the running back for a short gain. Went up against the left guard, Tyler Stevens, used his hands to beat him, ripped underneath the pad level, overpowered him, and then showed some quickness getting around, got to Curtis Rourke, but was also injured on the play there, ended up tearing up his knee. Look, 45 quarterback pressures was fourth among defensive tackles. I think Riley Mills is a guy that, when we look at the defensive tackle group, obviously that knee injury is going to be a concern, but I think that power, I'd love to see him come off the board in round number three. I think there's a good chance that we could see that because, there's a power, there's some quickness, and he's a guy that can not only be an impact against the run, but man, this is a guy that can be a force against the pass as well. I think the knee injury could potentially move him back around. I think any chance of him flirting with that second round, I think probably goes out the window, but I think third round makes a lot of sense. At least, obviously, we're talking about right now before we even get into the whole pre-draft process with any of the all-star games or the combine or any of the individual workouts, interviews, anything like that. Jack Kaiser, the linebacker. This is a dude, I swear, 69th game against Penn State. 6'1", 232 pounds. Actually showing some pretty good speed to get outside, chase down Catron Allen, getting to the perimeter. Did an excellent job underneath tight end Tyler Warren on a route to the end zone. Was able to make a play on the ball underneath. As the ball fluttered, was able to pick it off. The safety, Adon Schuler, was called for defensive pass interference, but still it was a nice play there by Jack Kaiser. Inside out, able to to get outside and chase guys down. The other thing that you love is the ability to blitz. He's a guy that times the blitzes up well, does a good job with his eyes, understanding where he needs to be. Against Georgia, the tight end, Lawson Lucky, up the middle of the field, turned and ran to keep up with him, was trailing the route, didn't get his head around, ultimately was underthrown and ended up getting called for defensive pass interference. So I think there is some athletic limitations when he's actually a cover linebacker, but I think in zone, he's much better off. I think, you know, his ability against the run, you know, you see his ability to scrape over the top, maintain outside leverage, did so against Trevor Etienne, able to drive him out of bounds into the boundary for only a 2-yard gain. So I think when I look at Jack Kaiser, I think he's better than J.D. Bertram. And when we talk about J.D. Bertram, he came off the board at number 143 overall in the 5th round. I think we could, you know, there's a good chance that we could end up seeing him come off the board in round, you know, maybe late round 3 or probably more like likely round 4. We saw Maris Lufau. That was a bit of a surprise. Came off the board number 87 overall to the Cowboys. Seen the field, actually got to start a bit. So is Jack Kaiser quite there? I think probably not. I think round 4 probably feels about right for him. When you looked at the linebackers a season ago, they were all athletes, right? Edgerrin Cooper, Junior Colson, Trevin Wallace, Maris Lufau, Tyron Hopper, Adisa Isaac, Peyton Wilson, Cedric Gray, Tyrus Knight. Those are the guys that you saw come off the board in rounds 2, 3, and 4. Bertrand, Tommy Eichenberg came off the board in round 5. Not as twitchy as some of those other linebackers. So I think, you know, when we're looking at Jack Kaiser, could he come off the board in round 4? I think it's possible, but I think in all likelihood, he's probably going to be a 5th-round pick when it's all said and done. He's going to be the guy patrolling on the inside. And then Howard Cross the 3rd. Look, you know, he's a guy, you know, this guy, you know, legacy, his dad obviously played for the Giants. Howard Cross is a guy, look, he's undersized at 6 foot, 288. He's battled some injuries this year. But a guy that when he's healthy can be a problem. You know, he can be a pass rusher. He's good, has good quickness off the football. Swim move to get inside. You're going to see a quick push pull on him as well. Saw that, you know, against Clemson a season ago. You know, quick penetration using his hands, getting into the face of the quarterback as he's throwing. I saw that against Navy with Blake Horvath. So I think with Howard Cross, the big question is just how healthy is he going to be? I think he's been a little bit of a step slow in his return. So that's something to keep an eye on. With Riley Mills out, you're going to be having Howard Cross the 3rd playing with Gabriel Rubio, Donovan Heinisch there up front as well. So I think there's going to be, if Ohio State, they can run the ball between the tackles, I think that's where you're going to see some of those issues there up front. And again, you know, there are a lot of young guys on Notre Dame who I think, you know, we're going to see have a big impact. You know, guys like Joshua Burnham, the defensive end. Drake Bowen, I already mentioned him. He's a sophomore linebacker. Junior Tui Halamaka, Kingston, Viliamu Asa, are guys, and Bryce Young at defensive end. You know, another guy who's battled injuries. The older guys seem to have been battling all the injuries, you know, which has opened the door for these younger guys that I mentioned. But RJ Oben is a guy who came over from Duke, was a pass rusher there, and I think he's finally starting to get healthy because you saw against Georgia, burst off the ball, beat Morgan Freeling, the left tackle, out of his stance, explosive burst. You saw a slap, rip, able to bend, dip the inside shoulder, chopping down on the quarterback, Gunnar Stockton's arm, for a strip sack that was recovered by Notre Dame in the red zone. Oben is 6'4", 260 pounds. He's the guy I think will be a day 3 pick. I think he does get drafted because of the overall body of work, what we saw there at Duke, and when he was healthy at Notre Dame. I think he's getting healthy at the right time. Ohio State's going to have to watch out for him. Donovan Jackson has held up pretty well against a lot of the pass rushers, but if he ends up against Josh Fryer, I think he's a guy that could end up exploiting Fryer there on the outside a little bit, because I think he struggles with some speed coming off the edge, and I think RJ Oben has a nice blend of speed and power coming off the edge. So when we talk about defensive ends, and I think ultimately RJ Oben is going to be a true defensive end, I look at this group, and looking at last year, you know, we saw a lot of, again, some twitchy guys. We saw Marshawn Nealand, who had all the power, come off the board in round 2. Then you get into, you know, Xavier Thomas was a guy that battled a ton of injuries and came off the board, you know, pick number 3 in round 5. I look at this, you know, I think that's, you know, Javonte Jean-Baptiste from Notre Dame came off the board in round 7. I think RJ Oben is probably he's a better edge rusher than him. So I think that 5th, 6th round range feels like that's about right for RJ Oben, with the ability to potentially move up draft boards if he can show, hey, he's all the way back from those injuries. So these are the guys, when Ohio State has the football, these are guys that are draft eligible and guys that we should be paying attention to. Now, when we talk about when Notre Dame has the football, obviously the attention has to turn to Riley Leonard, right? I mean, this is a guy who, against Northern Illinois, really struggled. And I think as a passer, he was still a work in progress coming over from Duke. And I still don't think he's quite figured it all out. But you've seen some signs of him being more than competent passer, and a guy that I think is just going to be more of that developmental prospect. But he's a guy that absolutely is a terror of a runner. And I think that's really where you're going to see him make a lot of, you could potentially make packages for Riley Leonard to run the football. 23 of 32 for 201 yards with a touchdown and interception against Indiana, but had 11 carries for 30 yards and a score on the ground in that 27-17 win over the Hoosiers. And then he follows that up with a game against Georgia where he really didn't have to do a whole lot, at least through the air. Now, this was a game where Jaden Harrison, the 98-yard kickoff return for a touchdown, really swung the momentum. Notre Dame ultimately that 23-10 victory. And, he was 15 of 24 for just 90 yards and a touchdown. And look, I don't think he has a ton of talent there at the receiver position. I think Jordan Faison's probably their best receiver. And then you have Mitchell Evans, the versatile tight end, who's an inline guy, but you can line him up all over. We'll talk about him here in a minute in terms of how he fits into the offense. 14 carries for 80 yards. Again, I think he's got deceptive speed. You look at him, he's a tall, lanky guy. You don't expect him to have as much speed, but he's able to get turn the corner and get down the field. And then against Penn State, 27-24 winners in this game. He was 15-23 for 223 yards, a touchdown, two interceptions, and then 18 carries for 38 yards and a score. I think the 223 yards, obviously the touchdown to Jaden Greathouse. I mean, you had a corner fall down. I think it was Cam Miller, if I remember correctly. And Jaden Greathouse was able to take it to the house. Big play there, obviously, that really swung the momentum. But when you look at Riley Leonard, and you look at him as a passer, 6'4", 212 pounds. And against Penn State, you saw the back shoulder throw on the money to Mitchell Evans. A.J. Harris was kind of trailing, puts the ball to the outside. Evans was able to stay in bounds down the sideline for a 32-yard gain. You watch him, in the pocket. He's forced up by Abdul Carter on the move, sails the throw on an in-breaking route by Jaden Harrison, which was ultimately picked off by Zachy Wheatley. I think that's the thing that you really have to watch for is his ability, him being pushed up in the pocket, because you're going to see JT Tuimoloau and Jack Sawyer pushing off the edge. Will you see Cody Simon coming off, coming with blitzes up the middle? Where are you going to see that? Or are you going to have somebody spying Riley Leonard? Because I think he's at his best when he's able to go ahead and, if there's nothing open, take off and run and make his impact with his legs. So you're going to have to contain that in some way. You're going to need to spy him somehow. And I think it's either Sonny Styles or Cody Simon. I don't think you can just rely on their speed to be able to get to the outside or potentially chase him down on the inside there, because Riley Leonard, again, has that deceptive speed. But again, with Zachy Wheatley, if you force him up in the pocket, I think that's where he could get some, get himself into trouble. You're going to see the rhythm passing game, his ability to throw on time. Once he's able to do that, you're going to see him able to really start to kind of put things together and get into a groove. Back shoulder throws, I think that's one of the things that you saw again Penn State against with Jaden Greathouse. It was third and long, back shoulder throw. Greathouse was able to climb the ladder, pluck it away from the DB. He couldn't really follow through because his running back was pushed right into him. Also had denied Dennis Sutton trying to grab him off the edge. Was able to still drop that football in. What you also love is the ability when he's getting pressured, he keeps those eyes down the field and was able to hit those plays down the football field. You saw Zion Tracy in the backfield right away, was able to avoid him and then rolling out to his right to avoid Abdul Carter, was ultimately unable to run him down, but he was able to throw it away. That was with about a minute one to play. Obviously, he knew that there was a field goal that was going to be coming up from Mitch Jeter. So heads up play there to get rid of the football. I think against Georgia, first play after a strip sack by RJ Oben that I mentioned previously. Bo Collins crossing the face of the corner, Dalen Everett, as he beats him to the inside, puts the ball right out in front into tight coverage for that 13-yard score. When he's on time, when he's not facing pressure that is ultimately forcing him to have to step up in the pocket, I think that's where he's really at his best. There was a sprint out on 4th and 1 from the 24-yard line against the Bulldogs. Jordan Faison was coming free. Chaz Chambliss steps up, delivers. Was coming free at him. Steps up, delivers a strike to the receiver for a 6-yard game. Ultimately, Faison was in motion before the tight end was set, so it was called for an illegal shift. So they ended up having to kick a field goal. But what you love there was his ability to draw that defensive end into him, and then able to throw the ball over the top on a sprint out. Against Indiana at one point, I think he had 8 completions in a row. So again, the rhythm. I think Mike Denbrock has done wonders. Obviously helped develop Jaden Daniels there at LSU, helped him with that Heisman Trophy winning performance. I think Riley Leonard, you could potentially see him develop a quarterback who wins the Heisman one year and then potentially the national championship the next. I just think the receiver play, again, Jordan Faison, I think, is probably their best receiver, but the wide receiver play at some point is going to get them in trouble, and I think this may be the week that it happens. Now, Jeremiah Love is a running back that we're going to be talking about in next year's draft. A guy who can run with power, like I said, 98-yard touchdown, so he's got the speed, and then the leaping ability. I mean, 6 straight games where he's hurdled a defender, and when he hurdles defenders, Duke has some serious hops. The biggest question is his durability. His ankle has been a big issue down the stretch, hurt it against USC, and then it's flared up multiple times. You have Jadarian Price, and you also have Aeneas Williams. Those are two guys that I think you could rely on a bit, but you really want to have a healthy Jeremiah Love. He really makes a big difference there. He'll be probably the number one running back that we're talking about in next year's draft. He and I think Mekhi Hughes, the fact that he's moving to Oregon from Tulane, another guy that I think is going to be popping up on everybody's radar early for the 2026 draft. Jordan Faison, a receiver that I think hopefully we'll be talking about next year as well. Mitchell Evans, though, as I mentioned, this is going to be a guy. He's a weapon over the middle, finds a way to get open. He's 6'5", 251 pounds. He's a weapon up the seam, a guy that's going to be a target over the middle as well. And then we saw a back shoulder throw, like I mentioned, against Penn State, and then the ability to show the body control, to stay in bounds, keep his footing, and continue to extend for extra yards. Against Indiana, struggled to seal the edge at times, so I think his blocking is something that he still needs to work on. Ultimately, cut back to the backside. Running back was ultimately dropped by Aiden Fisher, so I think that's something that he needs to work on there. But I think another reason why he's such an effective target is he understands the zone coverage, finds those voids in the zone, and sits down, does a continuous route. He's like, I'm ultimately giving the target there for the quarterback. He's going to settle down and end up making a play for his quarterback. So I think Mitchell Evans is going to play a huge role if Notre Dame is going to win. He's going to be a guy, especially on third down, that he's going to be looking for. This offensive line, Anthony Knapp is not going to be playing, which means Tosh Baker is going to be that left tackle. I think that's where you're going to see Ohio State really exploit things. I think Emil Wagner, the right tackle, has also had some problems with the speed. Rocco Spindler, he had to have Charles Jaguish come in at right guard at times. So is Spindler's health? I think it's been a war of attrition for Notre Dame up front, and not having the freshman Knapp, who basically started since the first game as a true freshman, he's a guy to really watch out for seasons to come for the Fighting Irish. Billy Schroth and Pat Coogan at left guard and center. I think this is where the strength ultimately is going to be is along the interior of the line. And so if they want to take off and run, it's probably going to be along the interior. But Ohio State, I've already mentioned, the defensive ends. And those are guys that I think we absolutely need to be talking about. But how about Tyleek Williams? Let's start the conversation there with Ohio State on defense, because Ohio State has a lot of guys on defense who we're going to be talking about for this year's draft. Tyleek Williams, only a junior, hasn't declared yet, and basically they have until, I think it's the 24th, 25th of January to ultimately make a decision. Tyleek Williams, he's stout at the point of attack against the run. What you're also going to see is the quickness. It's the quickness off the ball to end up chasing guys down from the backside against the run. Against Oregon, there was a sack by JTT. You know, works against the right tackle, Josh Carnell. He uses his hands to shove him back. And, you know, as Gabriel was trying to run up the middle, Gabriel ends up escaping to the outside right where JT was. But what you loved was with Tyleek Williams, which is this actual push, just shoving him wide, giving, you know, Dylan Gabriel all kinds of problems, and then ultimately forcing him into JTT. Against Tennessee, you know, he's engaging the left guard, Carrick, shoots those hands into his chest late, stood him up, eyes on the running back. As he gets to the hole, able to, you know, stack, shed, drop him for a tackle for loss. You're going to see him running stunts too, stunts with JTT, gets a push to the inside, pressures the quarterback, Nico Iamaliava against Tennessee from the pocket, looping around. Ultimately, the other defensive tackle, you know, Ty Hamilton, kept him inside, and JT was able to ultimately chase him down for the sack. So I think when you're talking about Tyleek Williams, you're talking about a guy who has strength to hold the point of attack. You see his ability to stack and shed. He keeps that you know, inside arm free on those runs between the tackles. You see the quickness off the ball to end up chasing guys down, you know, really from behind at times, getting into the backfield and affecting the run with some quick penetration at times. And then his ability to affect the pass, both on stunts and with his bull rush. I think Tyleek Williams could end up potentially having a huge game, you know, especially, you know, if he can, you know, exploit that interior of the line. I think that's ultimately where Notre Dame has to be running a lot of their football. So I think 91 is going to be a guy that we're going to be keeping an eye on. You know, if he has a big game and is affecting the line of scrimmage there along the interior of that offensive line, I think it's going to be a long day for the Irish running the football. Now, I mentioned JT Tuimoloau and Jack Sawyer. Now, JTT, he's one of those guys who I think is going to be a borderline first rounder. Now, I say that because when you look at all of the edge rushers, you know, you've got Nick Scorton, you know, there's Shamar Stewart who has a chance, but then you're also talking about Abdul Carter, James Pierce, Michael Williams, Mike Green, Princely Uwamahumielen. Those are all guys who I think are going to be those true edge rushers. When you're talking about a guy who's going to be a 43 defensive end, guy with his hand in the dirt, JT, Tui, Moloau is, you know, you see, like I said, Scorton and Stewart from Texas A&M, Landon Jackson of Arkansas, you know, I think potentially Jordan Birch from Oregon as well, but I think, you know, he's going to be right in that conversation. I think he's going to end up being a late round one guy. I think in that 25 range on back is probably where he's going to be. You know, watch that Oregon game. Watch him against Josh Connerly, the left tackle, who a lot of people have as top 20 pick. You know, beat him with speed, slaps the hands, then the rip, reaches in and hits Dylan Gabriel's arm as he's trying to throw. Speed to power to drive Connerly back into Dylan Gabriel. Uses hands off the snap to dispose of the tackle, the tight end, Patrick Herbert. Wraps up Jordan James for a tackle for loss. Then he was working against Terrence Ferguson later in the game as a wide nine and drove him up the field. Then Gabriel tries to run, runs into Tyleek Williams, forced back outside, and was ultimately able to make the sack. That was the play that I was talking about with Tyleek Williams. Against Tennessee, you know, he set the edge, kept the outside arm free, gets off the block, able to get a tackle for loss on the running back, you know, beating Lance Hurd to the inside. Good push all the way to Nico Iamaliava as, you know, Tyleek Williams was looping around on the stunt, keeps him to the inside, able to drop him for a sack. I think he works well on those stunts. He did a good job spying Iamaliava as well. So that's something that you could potentially see there with Riley Leonard, although Iamaliava did juke him in the open field on a play. So, you know, he's not the most fleet of foot, you know, in terms of the change of direction. Doesn't have a ton of bend coming off the edge, but you love the motor. You love the hand usage. You love the speed to power. You know, 6'4", 270 pounds. JTT, I think, is going to be wreaking havoc in this game, whether it's against the left tackle, Tosh Baker, or the right tackle, Emile Wagner. Same goes for Jack Sawyer. Now, Jack Sawyer, you know, this is a guy, I think when you look at him, he feels a lot like a Sam Hubbard clone, a guy who's going to play, you know, with a lot of, you know, not the most athletically gifted edge rushers, but a guy who is absolutely going to be playing with his hair on fire. Now, Sam Hubbard was a third-round pick, and I think ultimately with Jack Sawyer, he's a guy that could end up being in that second-round conversation. I don't think he's going to be first-round, but I think second-round makes a lot of sense. You know, we look at a guy like Sam Hubbard, you know, 6'5", 270 pounds, ran a 4.95 40. You know, so that was, I think, one of the concerns that people had was that overall athleticism. What you see with Sawyer is the motor. I guess Oregon, obviously, in the Rose Bowl, not a whole lot of bend, but a ton of effort and power. You saw him ripping underneath a Johnny Cornelius to the inside, getting a push all the way across the face to Dylan Gabriel. You know, Oregon setting up a screen to his side, beats the tight end block, able to leap, get his hands up to knock the pass. Now, that's something that Sawyer and JTT are so good at. So with Riley Leonard, he doesn't really throw the football around the line of scrimmage a ton, but if he is trying to get it out to the backs, trying to make some of those quick throws to the perimeter, he's going to have to watch out for both of these defensive ends. They are so good at getting up the field and getting their hands in passing lanes, just really understanding, you know, what's playing out in front of them. He attacks the wrist of the tackle really well, lifts up on them on that speed to power, and get into the backfield. Then obviously, you know, against Texas, we know about the scoop and score on fourth down, his ability to get off the edge, showed a little bit of bend, but ultimately it was some, you know, his ability to beat the tackle, and then really Cam Williams. Everyone's talking about Cameron Williams as a first rounder, and I think coming back off of the injury, he just really has not looked the same. And Jack Sawyer just beats him with speed and comes off the edge, chases down Quinn Ewers. I think he was kind of kind to Quinn with the hit, could have really laid out his friend and didn't, obviously, for that's his college roommate when Ewers was at Ohio State. And then he picks up the football and takes it in for six. You know, you didn't see a ton of speed in the open field. So, you know, that Sam Hubbard's time, Jack Sawyer could probably be right in that range. And look, he's 6'4", 265. So he's right in that same range with Sam Hubbard at 6'5", 270. Hubbard, again, came off the board in round number three. I think there's a chance that Jack Sawyer could come off the board sooner than that. Especially given the way that Sam Hubbard played early on in his career, and the way that Jack Sawyer really came to life in the playoffs, just being able to attack guys. You know, he showed an ability to dip underneath the right tackle, John Campbell Jr. in that Tennessee game, sweeping rip move underneath, straight to the quarterback for a sack. You know, his speed pursuing the running back Dylan Sampson, chasing him down from behind. Getting to him with Lathan Ransom was only a 3-yard gain, I think, but you saw the effort there, the motor. He's going to be a problem as well. I think that motor mitigates some of that lack of overall athleticism, or at least that fluidity in the hips. You know, there is some stiffness there. Like I said, could he be a second rounder? I think it's possible. It feels more like a third round pick when it's all said and done. So it'll be interesting to kind of see how he goes through that pre-draft process. But I'm going to be comparing him to Sam Hubbard all the way up until the draft. So, you know, really want to see how his numbers stack up, how he performs, and the different workouts as well. So that's up front for Ohio State. Then you get to the linebackers. Cody Simon is a guy that I think has really made a lot of money for himself down the stretch. This is a guy who's just been a reliable force in the middle of the defense. You saw against Oregon running the alley, being able to take down Jordan James in the open field, just really a reliable tackler, driving downhill on checkdowns, wrapping up the running back in the open field to prevent any run after catch. He's looking to deliver the big hit coming downhill as well. He actually cracked Nico Iamaliava's helmet coming downhill on third down on Tennessee's first drive of the game, ends up cracking his helmet, which, you know, I mean, the force there, just absolutely delivering a big hit. Does a good job spying the quarterback in the backfield on the edge, gets into the throwing lane, gets his hands up to knock the pass down. You saw that against Nico. I think you could potentially see him in that role with Riley Leonard. I think it would behoove them to have him doing that. I think you're going to see a lot of different guys spying the quarterback. But with Cody Simon, this is a guy who I think, you know, he does a decent job dropping into coverage, sitting in the zone. You saw that against Oregon. Felt the route coming across, you know, the tight end getting into his area, drove on the football, nearly picked it off. A guy who times up his blitzes pretty well. So, you know, I think Cody Simon at 6'2", 235 pounds, he'll be a guy that, again, you know, we talked about the linebacker core. Want to see, you know, I don't think he's the twitchiest guy. Be interesting to see how he times out there at the combine. But I think fourth round, you know, Cedric Gray came off the board in round number 4. That's about what I feel like Cody Simon is going to be. I think round 4 feels right. I think if he tests really well, he may sneak up into round 3, but I think round 4 feels right for Cody Simon. I think he's a guy who can end up starting early on in his career. Now, Sonny Styles is another interesting dude. At 6'3", 230 pounds, he's kind of that Isaiah Simmons type, right? Because he started at safety, moved to linebacker. You see the speed. He lined up at the left hash, and Tez Johnson, the receiver there for Oregon, in the Rose Bowl, jet sweep from right to left, shows the speed to get to the outside, nearly dropped the receiver with Denzel Burke for a loss. So, I mean, you're talking about a 6'3", 230-pound linebacker taking off, running to the far side of the field against Tez Johnson, who's a speedy receiver, and nearly able to chase him down. You know, this is a guy who I think he does a good job sitting in the zone against Nico, who's going through his progressions. You know, fled the pocket, tried to hit a receiver sitting in the void in the zone, closed in a hurry. He's got tremendous speed. Delivered a huge hit right as the ball arrived. Receiver wasn't able to hang on to the football. His dad played in the NFL, I think, with Sonny Styles. He's a guy that, because of that versatility, his ability to play safety, his ability to play linebacker, his ability to drop in coverage, he's a guy, you know, that twitchiness. He could come off the board as early as round 3. I think because the question is where do you play him on the football field? I think teams will sit there and struggle with that at times. So maybe round 4, round 5. I think it just all depends on where teams see them. You know, where does he fit? And I don't think he's going to be a fit for everyone. So that's really going to be the big question mark. But I think at linebacker, those are guys that are definitely going to be making plays. Cornerback, you know, Davison, you know, Igbinosin and Denzel Burke. I think you're going to see a lot of Jermaine Matthews. With Igbinosin, I think everybody loves his length, loves his size. He's 6'2", 193. You know, you see his ability to stay in phase. And you know, you saw him against Tez Johnson go ball, pass hung up a little bit in the air, was in phase the entire time, inside position, ball ends up bouncing off of his helmet because the ball was a little underthrown. What is so frustrating about Davidson Igbinosin is his inability to just trust his technique, trust his position. A lot of times he's going to be in phase, but he still wants to get handsy. He wants to grab receivers. Even at the top of the, you know, top of the route, you know, at the stem, he's grabbing guys. He's holding. He wants to get way too physical, way too aggressive. And I think he led the FBS in defensive pass interference penalties. And that's one of those things for me that I'm like, I can't shake that. You know, yes, he's got the length and everything, but man, that's just, you know, you're going to have to train that and teach that out of him at the next level. And so to me, I think he's a day 3 guy right now. It would behoove him to come back to Ohio State. And again, because it's the national championship, these guys have until, I think, the 25th for them to ultimately declare or not. Best player on defense is going to be Caleb Downs. You know, and he's not draft eligible. He's only a sophomore. But this is a guy, the intelligence is off the football IQ, off the charts. This is a guy who can play in the box if you need him to, can play over the top, can play in zone, he can play in man, a little bit of everything. Just does a great job you know, diagnosing plays. The instincts are just off the charts. Keep an eye out for number 2. He's going to be making plays early and often. But Lathan Ransom is another safety who I think doesn't get a whole lot of credit. I think there's some stiffness to his game. He's 6'1", 210 pounds, but he anticipates the run, comes downhill. He's going to deliver a big hit. A guy that, you know, against Oregon, not only delivered a big hit on Jordan James coming downhill, but in the passing game, over the middle, delivered a huge hit to Noah Whittington, the running back, on a catch over the middle. So very, very physical. He'll come from depth against the run. You know, Dylan Sampson tried an outside run, was able to drop him for just a 3-yard gain with Jack Sawyer running him down from behind. Speed option, JT Tui, Moloau takes the quarterback. Ransom is able to beat the tackle, John Campbell Jr., get outside, drop the running back, Peyton Lewis, for a loss. So a guy that does a great job playing downhill, does a great job against the run. I think he's going to do well, you know, in zone coverage, does a good job trusting his eyes and driving on the football in front of him. We'll get his hand in throwing lane, you know, and try to affect the pass at the catch point. The big thing for me with him is, I think, the stiffness in his hips. I don't know how well he can cover, and so that really kind of limits his game a little bit. Is he, you know, a box safety? Where do you actually play him? So I think because of that, he's an intelligent safety, but I think because of the stiffness, and we're probably going to see that at the combine, I think he's probably going to be a day three guy in that fourth, fifth round range. But definitely in this game, keep an eye out for number 8. He's a guy that's going to look to deliver, you know, huge hits early and often. So those are the guys that I anticipate making an impact, the guys that you should be keying in on, who are draft eligible prospects for the 2025 draft. And I think at the end of the day, Ohio State has too much firepower on offense for Notre Dame's defense. And I think that defense of Ohio State, the talent that's there, I think they're going to be able to bottle up and frustrate Riley Leonard. If you could somehow shut down their running game and force Riley Leonard to throw to beat you, I think you've won that game. You've won the battle. You've won the chess match. Because I think ultimately the receivers, they struggle. I think really what you're going to see is the tight ends and the running backs. That's who Ohio State's going to have to cover. And, you know, if they're able to do that, I think it's game over. I think ultimately Ohio State ends up winning this game by 2 touchdowns. I think it's going to be close for a while because, look, Ohio State is well coached. Notre Dame is well coached. Marcus Freeman, talented, young, up-and-coming coach. I can understand why the NFL is interested in him as well. You're going to see some creative plays. You know, you see that with the special teams all the time. I think they're going to need some of those big runs, whether it's a kickoff return, you know, from Jaden Harrison, or a big run, big play from Jeremiah Love, potentially Riley Leonard getting out into the open field and making a big play. But it's one of those things to where they're very one-dimensional. And I think if Ohio State can gear up to stop that run and force Riley Leonard to beat them with the pass, I think it's going to be a long day for the Irish. And I think at the end of the day, Ohio State ends up winning it. I think you're probably looking at a 28-14, 27-14, probably somewhere around there. That's probably what you're going to see when it's all said and done. I think, you know, the two-headed monster in the backfield plus all of those receivers. Christian Gray is talented. You've got, you know, Xavier Watts, but they can only cover so much ground. And I think there's too many weapons for them. I think Leonard Moore is going to get picked on a little bit. I like Adon Shuler, the safety. But I think, you know, it's one of those things to where pick your poison. You got Jeremiah Smith down the field. You've got Emeka Ebuka working in the slot, working underneath. Carnell Tate is an emerging receiver as well. They even got the tight end G. Scott involved as well. The biggest thing is turnovers. You know, we watched this weekend the divisional round of the NFL, right? And, you know, you talk about the Lions going down to defeat because of turnovers. You know, you watched, even before that, you know, Justin Herbert and the wild card, the 4 interceptions going down to defeat. And then you even saw the Rams, you know, with, fumbles, turnovers, ends up hurting. If Ohio State can take care of the football, you know, that's going to, you know, that changes everything. If Will Howard makes some poor decisions, if we have any fumbles, that's where I think Notre Dame can get themselves into the game and they can end up pulling off the upset. I think that's ultimately, if they win the turnover battle, you know, look, USC, it was a 14-point game. and they had two pick sixes. If it wasn't for the two pick sixes, USC would have been right in that game. You know, they were a team that was able to move the football against Notre Dame. So, again, you have to watch out for that defense. It's not opportunistic defense. So Will Howard just needs to make good decisions, take care of the football, you know, make the strikes down the field, take advantage of that when you can, but establish that running game and be smart about things, attack the middle of that field, and let your athletes do the rest. So I think at the end of the day, you're going to see Ohio State winning a national championship, Ryan Day living to fight another year with the Ohio State Buckeyes in Columbus. So with that, we'll go ahead and put an end to the podcast. Obviously, we'll be talking about how this game shakes out in the coming days. I also want to talk about the other teams that were in the college football playoffs. What we'll do is we'll start really at the back, right? We'll start with teams 9 through 12. Talk about them. So that was everyone from Tennessee to SMU to Indiana to Clemson. Then we'll talk about the top 4 seeds who all lost in the quarterfinals. So that's going to be Oregon, Georgia, Boise State, Arizona State. And then we'll talk about in the semis, we'll talk about Penn State, and we'll talk about Texas and those draft eligible prospects, what we saw there. And again, we'll talk about what their draft stock looks like at this point in time before we actually get into any of the postseason and into the pre-draft process. So stick around. There's going to be a lot more content coming your way. Then obviously we'll get into talking about who the underclassmen were that decided to declare. We'll start talking about the All-Star games, especially the Senior Bowl, and then the Combine after that. At some point, we'll be talking about the team needs. We'll be talking about free agency and really how that shakes things up. And oh, by the way, we'll also start talking about mock drafts. I don't like to do my mock drafts before really the board is set, before we know who is actually coming out and who is staying. We'll know more of that really by the end of the month. And then I'll be able to go ahead and bring my first mock first round to you. So until next time, everyone, for ReadyForTheDraft.com, this has been the Ready for the Draft podcast. I've been your host, Greg Schutz. Take care, everyone. Enjoy the national championship. And until next time, I am out.